Welcome to another edition of International House of Combat. Kelly Nelson here. I'm joined once again by Steve Willey. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be back for episode number three.
Yeah.
3 consecutive weeks of podcasting.
Yes. Doing the weekly podcast, it's sometimes not so easy. I've been doing WorldCast for almost 3 years now, and for the most part, we were weekly. We've had gaps and stuff. Back in the Titans of Wrestling days, that definitely wasn't weekly. That was sometimes monthly, sometimes every couple months. But now I have no excuses, really. I'm sitting around the house doing hardly anything most days. So, yeah, I can swing a weekly podcast. And this time we're going to different countries that we haven't explored yet. Two different countries that, as far as wrestling tradition go, are quite different, but they do share a common language. But when it comes, to the what they're known for in the world of wrestling, they're totally different. And the first one we're going to be looking at is Puerto Rico. And this is from 1991. And this is the WWC promotion, World Wrestling Council. It's been I want to say about 1973, 74, a promotion in Puerto Rico.
Yep.
Started by Carlos Colon and a few other guys. Miguel Perez, a legendary wrestler in the 50s and early 60s in New York with Argentina Roca. They were a tag team. He had a hand in the beginnings of it. Gorilla Monsoon was involved, I believe, from the get-go and was for years a partner. And Colon himself was from Brooklyn. I believe he grew up in Brooklyn, of Puerto Rican descent, and wrestled in the old WWF in the late 60s as basically not a jobber, but a jobber to the stars. Wasn't pushed. And he had some success in Calgary, actually, in the early 70s as Carlos Belafonte. That was his name there. I think, he was actually pushed a little bit there. But the name was, it had to be probably, I don't know, Stu Hart or somebody thought that Cologne just didn't fit. And in Calgary, there's definitely no tradition of Hispanic people, or it's not a thing in the Canadian prairies. But anyway, eventually he had a chance to start a promotion in Puerto Rico. I guess there wasn't really much going on at the time. Unfortunately, I'm not much of an expert on the history. There's a poster on PWO, El Boricua, who's from Puerto Rico. He's amazing. I think I brought this up already a few episodes ago, an amazing resource for Puerto Rican history. And he listens to most of the shows, so he'll probably maybe pipe in and give us some info after this drops. So, it was around 73, 74 that Colon started the promotion in Puerto Rico, and it took off pretty quickly. And Colon was able to, because he was now the owner, able to push himself in a main event spot. And it wasn't like he was unworthy of that. He turned out to be a great star and a great performer. Dylan Hales compared him years ago on PWO to Jerry Lawler in a lot of ways. Similar size, fired up baby face, facing like an army of heels, one after the next, often with a longtime manager like Jimmy Hart in Memphis. In Puerto Rico, there was a few managers, I believe, that just would bring in heel one after the next to face Colon. And now this is 1991, so Colon's probably been in the game for about 25 years, I would say, at this point. His peak was in the 80s, so this is kind of the beginning of a slow decline, I would say. Do you have much familiarity with Puerto Rican wrestling and Carlos Colon, Steve?
Very little. I have traveled to Puerto Rico a couple times with family, and a part that I didn't even realize how cool it was until I got home was we were staying in a hotel right next to Roberto Clemente Stadium, which was really neat for me. Being I'm a huge baseball fan. Roberto Clemente, I've read quite a bit about him. He's one of my favorite players of all time. And then learning when I got home that not only is it a famous stadium for baseball, but it was one of their huge outdoor stadiums for wrestling. So it was kind of cool to be on. You know, you could just walk right on the field and we were running around the bases and running around on Puerto Rican thing, hallowed grounds.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's one of the main stadiums. They do a lot, or they did back in the old days. I'm not sure how much they still do today. But yes, a lot of their shows were in baseball stadiums in Puerto Rico, outdoor shows with some crazy crowds. It's a very fun promotion to watch. There's tons of footage. I'm mostly just familiar with the 80s Puerto Rican scene, and you know, the crowds were super heated, and we're going to be looking at a match where I'm looking at the screen right now, and the ring is just in the middle of the on the ground, and there's no fans, there's nobody seated anywhere near the ring.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that was because of issues with fans throwing stuff, getting too close to the wrestlers. I know there was a few pretty crazy incidents over the years, and maybe this was one way of dealing with it. I've seen matches from this same, I'm not sure if it's the same arena, but it looks very similar, where there's nobody on there's no floor seats at all. Everyone's just in the stands. So there's...
When we were down there, both times, we caught the weekly show, and it was mostly from this area that we're seeing on the that we'll be seeing on the screen. It looks like a giant high school gym, and every single scene, every picture in the opening theme song was close up of someone's bloodied face. You know, there was or you know, brawls in the crowd.
Yes,
there were no seats. I've seen some 80s from this. I watched a bunch of I think mid 80s, like Savage went through there.
Yep.
In between Memphis and WWF at the time. So I mean there even looks like there's blood on the high school floor.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the poor school custodian who has to
clean up all the blood? And yeah, that could be not the greatest job.
Batteries and
batteries.
Cups of urine.
Yes. WWC, Puerto Rican Wrestling, was known for a lot of bloody brawls. Colon was definitely no stranger to the blade and to bleeding. He has one of the classic foreheads, a roadmap forehead, and his greatest career rival, Abdullah the Butcher, of course, has the best roadmap forehead. And there was tons of bloody brawls between them. Stan Hansen and Carlos Colon, that's a great feud from 86-87. That's easily available on YouTube. And all kinds of other guys. TNT, Savio Vega was a big star in Puerto Rico in the 80s and early 90s. And yeah, it's a really, for me, it's an easily accessible promotion because it's just, you know, easily understandable. It's Carlos Colon versus the heel in a blood feud. You don't need to know too much more. There's apparently really great angles. Those are available too on YouTube, featuring, like, showing how these feuds started, but I haven't really gone into those. But yeah, it has a little bit of everything, very much. And like I said, with the comparison to Lawler, very much a Memphis feel to the territory, with a lot of crazy brawls and crazy characters. And the match we're going to be looking at, Carlos Colon versus Dick Murdoch, is a barbed wire match. Now, that could mean, more often than not, a barbed wire match often turns out to be kind of a dull affair because, you know, they don't want to cut themselves up. They have legit barbed wire, and oftentimes the wrestlers are pretty tentative about getting tied up in the barbed wire, so you don't really... You have kind of a dull match. I mean, there's exceptions to that rule. Of course, the most famous one maybe is Terry Funk and Sabu from ECW 1997, where neither man was concerned about getting tied up in the barbed wire, that's for sure, in that match. Just one of the all-time most violent matches, at least in North America. So,
yeah,
we'll get right into this. Dick Murdoch, one of my faves from the last 10 years of watching old footage, always entertaining, can wrestle a broomstick. He's maybe one of the greatest examples of that. Just a great wrestler.
Okay.
So,
guy who was everywhere in the territory days.
That's very true. Yeah, he was all over in the 70s and 80s. And then at this point in time, I was looking up his results. He was involved a lot in Puerto Rico and also in Japanese indies. Very much, he'd sort of eased away from the major promotions by like 1985 or so. I'm not sure if it was like a burning bridges thing. I mean, he worked in Crockett in the late 80s, but he didn't really get pushed much after a certain point. When the 80s began, he was a definite main eventer, but by the end of the 80s, he was mid-card. But here, he is in a main event, and I looked on Wrestling Data earlier, and it looks like this may have been his first match in Puerto Rico. It's at least the first result, although we don't have the exact date. On the video, it says 1991. There's no month or day. He had a barbed wire match in 1991 against Cologne, which was his first match in the territory, according to Wrestling Data, April 6th.
You just come right in.
Yeah, so maybe either
just
there's...
come right in, going to a barbed wire main event.
Either we may be missing results, that's entirely possible, or perhaps Murdoch was like a hired gun or something being brought in. He has a manager, and you can see this on the screen here. He's in a cage above the ring. I read about this earlier. I forget what the name of the manager, who that was, but you can clearly see he's hanging from the ceiling. They had a barbed wire match in 1992 as well, so that... you know, the dates may be mixed up, but who knows? Anyway, that's the info we're going on, and hopefully if El Barriqua is listening, he'll be able to solve this mystery. Okay, so we will start on go. You ready, Steve?
I am indeed.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Tremenda rivalidad.
All right.
Entre Carlitos y el Capitán Cuello Rojo, Dick Murdoch.
I believe that's Hugo Savonovich on commentary.
Yes, sounds very much.
Who was a longtime commentator, but he was also in the 70s and I think early 80s. He was one of the managers, like I mentioned earlier, that was feuding basically with Cologne and would bring in guys to take on Cologne. Ooh, Murdoch got tied up in the barbed wire very early.
Okay, I see. It's hard to see with the graininess of the footage.
Yeah.
Because at first it just looked like there were horizontal barbed wires, but there's also arches, like triangles.
Yeah.
Connecting from the top rope to the bottom rope, so.
Yeah, it is very hard to see. Very thin, but yeah, you can see it definitely there. And yes, you're right. It's there. That's for sure. We'll see. Murdoch's got the taped hands up, so he's ready to get involved in the bar. Cologne's going sans tape. He's like, fuck that. I've been in.
He doesn't care.
No, he's been in a lot of these matches. His hands are probably immune to barbed wire almost at this point. Oh, jeez.
There are not many people in the stands.
No.
I don't know if this is a slow time for them.
Not, yeah, I have no idea.
Murdoch flipping him off.
Yeah. Sell, and he doesn't want to be there.
Dick Murdoch se siente de momento acorralado.
Yeah, there's lots of barbed wire, that's for sure.
Pasada fuerte de la acróbata de Puerto Rico.
Ah, Jesus.
Es un placer para nosotros en Capitol Sports.
Yeah, well, if Murdoch was unknown, sorry, to Puerto Rico, maybe that would be one reason why it didn't draw that well.
Las grandes batallas de la acróbata de Puerto Rico, Carlitos Colón.
Murdoch, not very well liked in some wrestling circles.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, he was his own worst enemy. I think he had a pretty bad drinking problem that led to his death at a very early age. He wasn't even 50 years old.
Yeah.
Definitely someone that had an independent spirit that didn't want to, you know, wasn't beholden to any one promoter, really.
Got some razor wire?
Yeah, okay.
Some of them.
Oh, a chain, I guess. I think it was perhaps even dropped down from above by the manager in the cage, which is a common spot in any match involving someone hanging from the ceiling. Not that he couldn't have just had that in his trunks anyways. I don't think the referee gets headbutted.
So it feels like the comparison to Memphis is you bring in your heel du jour, build him up just a little bit, and then feed him to your, in this case, your owner, your booker.
Yeah.
That's why it'll be interesting to see if we can find any background on Murdoch in Puerto Rico. If he did just come in and have a match or two, and you're in the main event barbed wire match.
Yeah. Okay, well, Carlos has turned the tables here. Yeah, they didn't waste any time going straight to the violence, that's for sure.
And I was also referring to, there's some accusations from guys like Dusty Rhodes and Rocky Johnson that Murdoch was involved in the Ku Klux Klan.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely controversial. Yeah,
to say the least.
I mean, he was known as Captain Redneck. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think it's not really a secret that he was involved. I haven't heard any like specific allegations of like outright racist behavior and anything like that, but. Well, you know, wrestlers tend to lean towards the conservative side of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty extreme conservatism there.
Well, now we got some color.
Some nice color. It's been mostly Carlos on top of, but just as I say that, low blow. Yeah. He'll be singing soprano, as they used to say.
Transition for both guys, too, was the low blow.
Yeah.
That's how Colón took control.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of empty seats.
Yeah, there is no one on that side of the camera.
Hmm. Well, I'm sure Carlos is going to come up bloody after that. See, what is this? Is he, the manager has got a chalkboard that he's... Is that what it is? That he's sending instructions down to Murdoch?
He's sending it. Yes, he said there were two words on it. I couldn't tell. Sending instructions on it.
Cut him with the barbed wire. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant.
For LA Dodgers.
That's right, yeah. That's an interesting twist on things.
The coach.
Yeah. That's cool, though. I like that. Nowadays, you have Arn Anderson as Cody's coach. I like that, how It's a good use of the manager, more than just standing at ringside and interfering.
Apparently the chalkboard said punch him.
Just the most simple of instructions. Choke.
You use the barbed wire.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Cuando están cerca de los alambres, cualquier cosa puede suceder. Yeah, yeah, Carlos. Y el acróbata de Puerto Rico. Busted wide open now. Sufriendo de heridas en el cuerpo también.
Ahí está Murdoch. A patada limpia. I always wonder in these matches, like WWE was known to gimmick the barbed wire.
Yes, yeah.
Like who's gimmicked in, who's not. I mean, AEW at the, was it Dub? What was the show that had Omega and Moxley? They were using pretty legit stuff.
I think so. Full Gear was the show. That was controversial afterwards. Oh, the mutilation, which has shown how much things have changed with wrestling fans in 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that was legit. I'm not a deathmatch guy. I never have been. So that doesn't, you know, extreme violence doesn't do anything for me. But I'm a wild brawl guy. There's a middle ground, I guess.
The Vice documentary by Debra and Abraham called The Wrestlers, and I watched the death match. And it was nice to hear a little bit of this, more of the psychology behind it, but yeah, it's not really for me either.
No. Here's a classic.
Like, I won't mind watching like a crazy Onita match or something like that.
Right. Oh yeah, there's an art to it for sure. But sometimes it just seems, from the clips I see, it's just diving into glass and stuff. It's just, and then they're showing their backs and all the cuts and stuff, and it's just like, I hope you made more than $50 or something for that match.
Unlikely.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy. So we had just seen a classic Carlos comeback where he does the cartwheel. That was a pile driver feature of his comebacks. A unique feature.
It was like a half round off.
Yeah, this manager's in a full baseball uniform, it looks like. Which is funny, because this is one of the few matches that isn't in a baseball stadium. What is coming down now? Oh no! The Knox and Dick Murdoch. He was a brass Knox champion over the years, and probably Texas and Florida and some other territories. Oy, this could be it.
On the first pinfall attempt.
Wow!
Got him,
and it's over.
Something I didn't get to comment on: the very weird head bumps that they would take into the top rope.
Yeah.
Like that, it was almost like a Kurt Angle when he would slam the chair into the rope and then backfire and hit him in the head.
Right.
It's just like these odd head bumps.
Yeah. Well, they were selling the barbed wire, like it was, like getting rammed into steel or whatever. Still the champion. Wow, that was just around 10 minutes long. We still have a few minutes left on the video, so I'm assuming something. Oh, of course, no, yes.
Oh, geez.
Carlos just enraged. And the manager is quite scared now. Trying to get out. I don't know if Carlos wants some time with him or not. Or is he satisfied?
Murdoch with the big oversell ticks the Brass knock to the head, runs into the cage with the manager, bounces off.
Oh, yeah. No, Murdoch was so good. This isn't the best example of him as a wrestler, that's for sure. This was fine, but there's some really classic Murdoch performances. He's very good in matches with jobbers and just sort of meaningless undercard matches where he can work a headlock for like 10 minutes and make it entertaining. And there's a match I've talked about so many times where it's him against Afa from the Wild Samoans. It's from 1984 WWF in Madison Square Garden. And it's a 20-minute draw, but it's maybe the best 20-minute draw I've ever seen. Just because Murdoch was so entertaining. That's like classic broomstick Murdoch in that match. It's on the network, that whole show, so anybody can see it with a network subscription. So I don't know.
He's waiting for the manager to get out.
Yeah, looks like it. And he's got to come out eventually. I'm getting flashbacks of the infamous Shark Cage match. I don't know if you've ever seen this, Steve, between Chief J. Strongbow and Don Kent from Detroit in like 1977. Yeah, we're maybe going to see that, because that's what that match was. It was two guys wrestling in an actual shark cage, so about the same amount of space.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah. So we're going to get this here. Oh, Carlos. Carlito, of course.
Yeah.
Even has a number and a name on the jersey.
Yeah, the number is one. I'm trying to see the... He keeps to the announcer, Hugo, just keeps saying Carlito, but I'm wondering if they're referring to Carlos.
Yes, they are. Yeah, that's the Spanish equivalent, right?
Yeah, for like little Carlos, it's like a term of endearment.
Okay, well, that's it. Probably, I guess, the shortest match we've watched so far. But I wanted to dip our toes into Puerto Rico a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit of a taste. Just a little bit of a taste.
Exactly. We've got weeks and weeks to fill up. So, yeah, we'll just start with that, and then we'll build up to more epic encounters. I'd never seen that before, too, and I'm a huge Murdoch fan, like I've said numerous times already, so that was the reason I picked that one. It was good. It there was no downtime at all. It's, as far as barbed wire matches go, it's on the better end of the spectrum. There was double juice. You also had the manager in the cage angle or gimmick. So, yeah, I would say that's a thumbs up, but it's not a must-see match or anything. What were your thoughts, Steve?
Enjoyable, like slightly above average. I think my favorite part of the match was the manager lowering down the little kitty chalkboard with the instructions on it. A very nice touch that I've never seen before.
Yeah, that was cool. And then, handing down the foreign objects, the brass knucks.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. And then some good post-match stuff there, too, with Carlos getting a little vengeance on someone who's probably been a thorn in his side for several months. So that was a fun little introduction to Puerto Rico.
And like you said, really easy to hop into.
Yeah.
It's not like we were watching the French match, which was great, but there was a little bit of a learning curve there into what was going on. Could have been in like an ECW show, and I'm sure ECW probably took a bit from Puerto Rico as well.
Yeah, well, ECW took a lot from Memphis, that's for sure. And that's definitely right up ECW's alley, that's for sure. So now we're moving on to a different country. This is Mexico for the first time. So compared to Puerto Rico, totally different style, or when you think of lucha libre, Mexican wrestling, you think of course, the masks, the high flying, the tag teams, the trios matches, and they have their fair share of bloody brawls. And But they're not so much on the gimmicks, or some promotions are, I suppose, more so than others. AAA will definitely use all the American style gimmick matches.
Sure, especially these days.
Yeah, whereas CMLL, the older promotion, well, by quite a few decades, is pretty straightforward in their presentation even today. I mean, I think they're still doing best 2 out of 3 fall matches for most of their matches. AAA may too. I know more. I'm more familiar with CMLL than AAA, to be honest with you. But my knowledge of both is not great. Lucha Libre is something that I've always meant to, like Joshi, get into, but I've never sat down and committed myself to it. So, yeah.
The history is vast.
Yes.
The history is vast. So yeah. It's one of those things that's very difficult to find a place to start.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is vast. It's not as accessible as Puerto Rico, at least in my opinion. It's, you don't have the familiar names that may draw you in. Like in Puerto Rico, they used a lot of American wrestlers, American stars in the 80s anyway. And Lucha has their own homegrown galaxy of stars, guys that are, you know, Hall of Fame wrestlers, that are amazing performers, that have, you know, expanded outside of Mexico at times and gone around the world. But it's a universe or a world onto its own in Mexico, and it's a very exciting style and, of course, amazingly popular over the years, and with a history that goes back to, I believe, the 1920s, but probably even earlier. And CMLL goes back, it's the oldest promotion in the world. It goes back to 1933, I believe. So much older than any McMahon family wrestling promotion and anything in Japan, of course. So it's a country with a rich history of wrestling. So we're going to look at a match that I've had saved on YouTube for years that I've never watched. It was the version I had saved on YouTube originally was in 3 parts, so it was like a really old YouTube video back in the days when they had limits on how long the videos could be, I guess. But then just recently when we decided to watch this match, I looked to see if there was a full version and a complete version, and there is. So that's great. It's 31 minutes, 19 seconds. And it's El Hijo de Santo versus La Parca. And firstly, Santo, he's the son of the original, or the great El Santo, who was basically the god of Mexican wrestling, the equivalent of a Hulk Hogan or a Giant Baba Antonio Inoki culturally. But I think even on a much greater scale as far as recognition with just the average person within his own country. The funeral for El Santo in 1984 was attended by thousands and was a huge, huge deal. Of course, El Santo was a movie star as well in Mexico, made tons of movies where he fought monsters, and I think was kind of like a James Bond-type spy at times as well. And a lot of the Mexican stars of the 60s and 70s made movies like the Blue Demon and Mil Máscaras, and culturally just more famous than any wrestler in any other culture was in their own country. So this is his son, who became a legend in his own right and is still wrestling today. And his opponent, La Parca, a lot of people would know from late 90s WCW, because he was a mainstay for quite a few years there. Pretty much just undercard stuff. Occasionally got involved in a more important angle. The one I can remember is, of course, the Diamond Dallas Page angle, where Page was dressed up as La Parca. And he was given the gimmick as the chairman. He was hitting guys with chairs like crazy. Did the dances. Had the very cool looking outfit, covered head to toe. I've always been a masked guy, like as far as like the North American masked guys, the old school guys like Masked Superstar and the Destroyer, Mr. Wrestling, and La Parka. I didn't, whenever he turned up, I guess it was around 1996, 97, I had no real knowledge of Mexican wrestling at that time, but I instantly really gravitated. Of all the guys, I mean, Rey Mysterio, yeah, he was awesome. Everybody loved Rey. And Psicosis and Juventud Guerrera, those guys were cool too. But I immediately gravitated to La Parka because he was, you know, a bit more mysterious and he was a heel. And then he started to show more and more personality and he had the comedic side to him. And yeah, so he's a guy that I've always really liked, even though I haven't really explored him as far as his lucha work, which I know is very highly regarded by a lot of people. Steve, what are your thoughts on La Parka?
Oh, man, I love La Parka. The same thing with you, with coming up through WCW is where a lot of American fans got with him. And he stood apart from the other people, not just like his personality, but his outfit. Rey Mysterio was more for his gymnastic style, his size or lack thereof, but La Parka was size on the other side. Most of the luchadors in WCW had a very similar frame, a very similar style. La Parka was bigger. La Parka had the chair. He was more of a power guy, even though he wasn't that tall. And he was prolific for WCW. He wasn't just on Nitro. He might not have been in the main event stuff, but he would be on all the syndicated shows. He'd be on Saturday Night, yeah. You know, Thunder. So he was around a long time. Great, yeah, like all-time mask. If you go to Mexico, it's Rey Mysterio and La Parka are still the ones that are in all the markets. I have all sorts of different versions of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I told you before we went on the air, I got to see him with my kids about a year and a half ago. Still going strong, he is. Mm-hmm. Kind of reminded me of the time I saw Super Crazy years after ECW. Well out of shape, but still doing the same shtick.
Yeah.
Violent stuff. You know, like when you get older like that, you can lean on some of the more gimmicks and on the violence. And I feel like with this match, we're going to see, first of all, we saw some stills that looked pretty darn bloody. Yeah. And second, the fact that La Parka is wearing all white.
Yes.
Which is not something you usually see.
No.
And Hijo del Santo looks like he's wearing mostly white too. That we're about to see some sort of blood fest in this one, I have a feeling.
Oh, yes. Much like the Baba match that we watched against Dick the Bruiser last week, the thumbnail for this it jumps out at you because it's Del Santo just covered in blood, basically, with his mask ripped and looks like he's been through a war. So that's always a good thing or a good indicator of what's to come. And in case there's any confusion, this is the original La Parka we're talking about, the wrestler right. Who's now known as L.A. Park and has been, I guess, probably longer than he was known as La Parka. Now it's been nearly 20 years. And it's not the La Parka that unfortunately and tragically passed away earlier this year after, because there was a point in, I think it was around 2002 or so, where this La Parka, the original La Parka, lost the rights to that name. And I believe it was AAA that started or created a new La Parka with basically mm-hmm. the same look, same costume. And that man is the one who died tragically at the beginning of the year as a result of injuries that he suffered in a match probably two or so months prior. It was...
Yes, and NOF 19.
Yeah, basically, yeah, the end of 19, yeah. So it was a really tragic situation. And what about Del Santo, Steve? Do you have a lot, do you have any opinion on him, really?
Not really at all. You know, I'm very familiar with his father. Like you said, he's definitely a mainstream Mexico mm-hmm. star. The amount of movies that he was in, when I was working on my degree, I worked at Blockbuster for a long time, and you could access pretty much any movie ever made. You couldn't watch it, but you could access like titles and stuff and see if they're available.
Yeah.
Like tens of match like of movies, like 50, yeah. 60, somewhere around there. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And they would show up occasionally in the United States on syndication back in the day as well. Very much B movies, like stuff you'd,
yeah,
you know, you might find on a Mystery Science Theater,
yeah,
program.
And unfortunately, it's the only footage we have of El Santo,
yeah,
in the ring are from his movies. There's, as far as I know, there's no actual taped arena footage of El Santo. And yeah, the only time I've been to Mexico, my wife and I went to an all-inclusive resort. And one of the few times I turned on the TV, as soon as I turned it on, it was the end of a movie with Mil Máscaras from 1965, 66 or thereabouts. It was in black and white. And from what I could gather, it was like Máscaras was playing like a James Bond spy. And then whatever show it was like a Turner Classic Movie production where after the movie was over, you had this guy in studio talking about the movie sitting on a chair. So that was cool that, you know, I only turned the TV on, I think, two other times maybe. And of all things for to be on when I turned it on, it was a movie with Mil Máscaras in it. So that was cool. Yeah, they pumped out movies like dozens per year, I think, at one point. It was just a huge industry. Okay, well, let's, without further ado, let's get into this one because it's a long one. And we'll go on 3, 2, 1, go as always. 3, 2, 1, go. All right. We get a brief.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're right into it. Yeah. Wow. Del Santo with a huge forearm to start things off. And wow, yeah, La Parca is very, very thin at this point in time.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Actually jarring.
Yeah, it is jarring.
Compared to,
yeah, because I thought even in WCW in the late 90s, he was heavier than this. I think he was.
Yes.
So,
oh, yeah.
Maybe it was those lean years in America where maybe wasn't making a lot of money and lost a lot of weight. Because the date on this is December 23rd, 2001. And
it's out of Monterey.
Yeah, Monterey. Yeah.
I have a card up in front of me here. So this was a freelance show called Wrestling in Mexico.
Yeah.
Mexico spelled with a K for some reason. That might just be the translation.
Yeah, I did see that earlier myself. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, this was all of the matches were best out of three falls.
Yeah. Yeah, so this was not a CMLL card, and it was obviously not a AAA card. But it seems like I just did a little bit of research briefly earlier today. It looked like it was mostly CMLL wrestlers that were used here. With Puerto Rico, I just don't know enough of the history to confidently talk about it. We do have two referees in the ring. That's interesting.
Parker's mask already been ripped, and we're only about 2 minutes into the match.
Yeah, so it seems like this was an intense feud. I did look at their career record against each other, and it was pretty much, it was like 98% tag matches they were involved in. There was hardly any singles encounters between these guys. But in Mexico, tag wrestling is king.
Yeah.
Especially trios.
This is
matches.
The only single match on the card. Someone interfered on behalf of Santo, and Santo was pissed about it.
Yeah.
Tell him to get out.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea who that wrestler is. And there's another, I guess. Oh, yeah. Okay, so Santo has his corner guy.
That could be Ultimo Guerrero in the purple mask.
Okay. Yeah, I know the name, and I know Ultimo Guerrero is considered a legend, but to be honest, I couldn't pick him out of a police lineup.
Yeah. We have the match before this was Dr. Wagner Jr., Tarzan Boy, Ultimo Guerrero versus Antifaz del Norte, Atlantis, and Safari. So five of those six names are familiar to me.
Crazy. And I saw one of the results for Santo versus La Parca was a match in Detroit, of all places, in 2005. A cage match for some indie. That sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, you'll have your cards in California.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Chicago. Yeah. Oh. Parca taps in a camel clutch.
Yeah.
That was quick.
Very quick. Not unusual for the 2 out of 3 falls format in Mexico for the first 2 falls to go by pretty quickly. So, yeah, that was less than 5 minutes for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 3:40 about.
Yeah. Wow. So La Parca just had his ass totally kicked in that fall.
It's very strange psychology, in my opinion, to have these feuds, you know, best out of three, and then the first fall or two end so quickly, and then your third fall take like 20 minutes or whatever.
Right.
It just doesn't make much sense.
It's a common complaint I've seen over the years where a lot of people are like, oh, why don't they just do away with the 2 out of 3 falls since, you know, they only do, like, the first 2 falls go so quickly, and then you have a 20-minute-plus third fall. But it's tradition. And
it's a tradition, yep.
Yeah. I mean, I admire them for sticking to it. I mean, 2 out of 3 falls matches in the States and in Canada at one time were very common as well in certain territories, more than others, but maybe not as common. Like, in Mexico, like you said, every match on the card is 2 out of 3 falls. Whereas in the States, it was often just the main event that was 2 out of 3 falls.
Thrown into the post from the apron two times now.
Big time. His La Parca's mask is hanging on by a thread, it seems like. Wow. No guardrail, no barricades at all.
No, I just imagine bringing here. That kid looks to be about 11.
Yeah, very young.
Bringing him, you're sitting in the first row in a blood feud, no guardrail.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you can tell it's not a top promotion the way it's being filmed. Kind of guerrilla style from the outside.
Yeah, that's good stuff, though.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with the gritty presentation.
No. I mean, for me, it's I wouldn't say it's a miracle, but it's so fascinating that something like this was able to be salvaged. Because you expect the bigger promotions to have all their stuff, you know, for television and easily found, but you know, indies of older years or these other countries to be able to find like more of an outlaw independent show filmed is just great.
Yeah. Well, and this clearly was televised. There's a watermark on the screen, I'm assuming is of the TV station or something like that.
I feel like Parca should be bleeding right now.
Yeah.
But I can't see it.
No, I don't think so. It's going to be messy, though, with that white, mostly white uniform he has on. And Santo, too. Wow. Straight fist to the face. Yeah, there's no pretense to any real mat wrestling here. It's just heat fueled.
Parca is bleeding because you can see where the blade is on his wrist and there's blood on it.
Oh, wow. Good eye, Steve.
You just can't. Yeah, you just can't really see it on his face.
It's funny.
No, I think we should probably tell the listeners that we would like didn't go out of our way to pick bloody matches.
No,
it just so happened that that's what we're watching.
Yeah. I mean, I do love blood in my wrestling, but I'm not someone that needs it nonstop. But yeah,
right.
One thing is that it's relatively rare in today's wrestling, or at least, you know, mainstream wrestling, although AEW has been bringing it back a bit.
Mm-hmm. When it's needed.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's not gratuitous. It always makes sense in the context of the story that they're telling. Oh, that was a great tope. La Parca. He does love to go into the stands in a lot of his matches, where he's like he is right now, pushed back. There's a famous gif of La Parca from I don't know when it was, where he's in the stands sitting down, and some fan tries to rip his mask off, and La Parca just cold cocks without missing a beat, and then just goes back to working. Yeah. So awesome. It's one of my favorite things in wrestling ever.
Parca's fired up.
Yeah.
Punch Santo as he was coming off the rope.
I wonder if La Parca is the babyface here, because I know Santo has worked heel in the past. Jeez. It's hard to tell so far, really.
Yeah. The only reason I think so is because the other Santo had that second that tripped up Parca.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah.
Oh! Wow. Santo sent to the third row of a Beal.
That was great. I love these seats. They're all attached to each other. Yeah.
Like old school movie theater seats.
Yeah, basically. Several headbutts.
This goes back to what you were saying about the Clone Murdoch match. This isn't a death match. This is a brawl.
Yeah.
This is a hatred-filled brawl.
Yeah. Yeah, there's obviously a major story behind it all. Biting now. This is very ECW-like here. Can't see shit.
At least he's not. Oh, wait, they might be starting.
I think so.
Okay, they brought it back to the ring. My least favorite kind of ECW or independent trope is when you would, like, grab him by the ear and just lead him around
the
stands in the arena. ECW was guilty of that a lot.
Yeah, the infamous walk and crawl.
We're just going to walk together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. It can be done well, but it's often just kind of a lazy way of wrestling. Yeah, Santo, of course. Busted wide open, mask ripped open. Parca working the cut.
Oh, that's gross.
There's the...
Oh, it's the mask.
That's the thumbnail picture right there, image.
Yeah. It's like he bladed through the mask. Can you imagine that dripping inside of your mask and then trying to... It's hard enough to see and breathe in that.
I know. It's crazy. Jeez, tree of
tree
woe.
Of woe. Yes, pouring. Oh.
Yeah, the mat's going to be quite a mess by the end of this. Jeez. I wonder if there's any stakes to this match.
I don't think it's a mask. It's not like a mask versus mask or anything.
No, it can't because, yeah, neither man obviously lost their mask at this point in time.
There were some chance for Santo. Yeah, you're not getting your chair back.
And the fans are just, you know, oh, it's no big deal, really. Wow.
God, his mask is gross.
What a mess.
Biting at the cut.
Yeah, vampire La Parca. Just a nonstop brawl. La Parca con patadón.
El hijo del santo lo lleva contra la butaca. Bar fight.
Yeah. Esto se ha prendido en serio. Well, the, you know, the cliched image of Lucha Libre is the, you know, the high flying matches, the trios matches, but really a main feature for years of Mexican wrestling, Lucha wrestling, is, has been the bloody brawls. It's another calling card.
Yeah, the, your main event matches, your grudge matches, especially on the big shows, were more singles.
Mm-hmm.
Settling feuds.
Yeah.
Ugly suplex about a minute ago.
This could be a submission coming up, maybe.
Ooh, crowd not happy that he messed it up a little bit.
Yeah.
They're covered with blood. Give them a break.
Yeah. And they've been swinging, wrestling wildly for quite a while now. Interesting. Yeah.
Park is just covered in Santos' blood across his white skeleton outfit.
Yeah. Hope he gets these outfits for relatively cheap, because I don't know if he'd be able to use it again after this.
Well, in 2020, this could be going up on eBay for quite a pretty penny.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Oh, only a two. Got his arm underneath after La Maestro. Mm. Oh, gross. Get off of that.
Yeah, there's a... that's on the three-part video of this match, that's one of the thumbnails, is that image of the puddle of blood.
It's not even smeared, like, into the mat. There's just puddles.
Yeah.
It's like going to a swimming pool and the puddles that line up. They just... Yeah, they missed a three count, but, yeah, there's a three count off Rana off the rope.
Rana off the top rope. Two refs. One thing I've never liked with the two refs is them both counting at the same time. It's just, I don't know, it always looks foolish, and often they're not in sync.
Yeah.
You should just have, if you have two refs, like, it's fine, you know, psychology-wise, if it's a wild brawl, but you don't need two guys both going down to count the pin. It just looks silly.
Yeah, just have one on the outside.
And... yeah, or one just standing aside when the other goes down to count the pin. How will Santo recover to wrestle a third fall?
That's a good idea, you know. His buddy's checking on his on his eye by sticking his dirty ass thumb right into the wound. They're slipping in the blood. Gross.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not for the squeamish.
And it's the white tights and outfits that really make it stand out.
Oh,
more.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what they're, that's why they're wearing them. Well, I mean, Santa always wore white, but La Parca, this was a different look, at least from the WCW La Parca that most people think of. Okay, we have a
commercial break.
Yeah, I think so. Edited out. Would have been interesting if we had to comment on some Mexican commercials out of nowhere.
It'd be, that'd be glorious. I live for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been, it would have been fun.
Look at La Parca.
Ugh, so bloody now. Oh, look at this. La Parca has been... watching some Monday Night Raw when he was in the States, when Bret Hart innovated the ring post figure four. Oh, he didn't go all the way there. Just a bloody massacre.
Crowd really behind Santo right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, this is an interesting... the psychology for this is interesting.
And I think Pac is the, like just trying to read the body language. Pac is frustrated by it. And it just felt like he is the face, so that would be a reason to be frustrated.
But I'm sure it was hard for a lot of fans to ever look at Del Santo as a heel.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, the particulars of his turn. I mean, now he seems like he's totally the face doing all this stuff.
I always love the corner to corner dives.
Yeah, the corner topes.
Yeah, it just takes a little more skill.
Yeah, yeah. It's fearlessness, too.
You're trying to keep the fans back.
Yeah. It's getting heated now. Nobody's moving.
No. If I can complain a second about modern day wrestling, and I love modern day wrestling, I'm not gonna shit on it too much, but the amount of like topes and such.
Oh yeah.
Like in
suicide dives. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Cody Rhodes has been doing some really, really bad ones lately. Uh oh.
Yeah, there's a lot of moves that are just overused so much nowadays. But pops the crowd, so it's hard to complain. But yeah, another one, the Canadian Destroyer has become basically an Irish whip. It's so common. Nice.
Only Dustin Rhodes should be able to do the Canadian Destroyer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I popped the first time I saw Ricky Morton do one against LAX, I think it was. But now he does it every time he wrestles since diminishing returns totally with that.
No, that looked like three to be.
Yeah, some nice near falls here by Del Santo. That's the Parka's turn.
I'm glad my wife's not coming in while I'm watching this.
Oh, mine is. I don't think she's paying too close attention.
She walked in when I was watching Mania with those Becky Lynch against Shayna Baszler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But... she used to go to shows with me way, way back in the day and to see the foolishness of an empty arena.
Yeah.
Oh, he came up from behind.
Nice.
Both referees waving. No?
No surrender.
I thought he was going to rip off his mask there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we get a replay, too.
Oh, back to the live-action camel clutch.
Nice.
They're slipping all over each other.
Here we go. Going back to the surfboard.
Feels like one of them is going to have to pull out a pretty big finish to end this.
Yeah.
Oh, God. His face just left a huge puddle on the ground as they were into the surfboard.
Oh, nice. Oh.
Under the ropes. Yeah, only one ref counted there. It's a little, little shady because his head was under the rope.
Yeah.
Parka known for doing that.
Yeah.
Two-legged bump off the rope. Flipping at the last second so he doesn't crack his head.
Huge body press by Del Santa.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Great height and hang time.
Mm-hmm.
Despite...
both men selling exhaustion.
How much would Pete Schumacher pay for Santos' mask after this match?
Oh, probably.
I hope you're listening to Pete. Love you.
Yeah, he does have a collection of merchandise. I know that. I mean, he's one of the ultimate collectors in the United States, I believe.
Yeah.
He's got...
he's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember he bought a Pentagon mask after when he was really making it big on the indies.
Yeah, that's cool.
And the fact that he did it almost made me do it as well when I saw him a few times in Chicago. Like, well, Pete did it, then I can do it too. Oh, another close magistral pin. One, two. Really wrapped up tight. Should start rating the refs based on their
the counting. Oh,
laziness compared to Bronco.
yeah, these guys, or the English ref from the first match where he just eyeballed the pin, didn't even slap his hand on the mat. These guys are, yeah, nowhere near that bad. Oh my.
Oof, it's dangerous. Both balance on the top.
Van a volar, ¿qué van a hacer? ¿Hacia afuera o hacia adentro? ¿Hacia el centro o hacia el exterior? ¿Qué es lo que va a pasar en este momento?
Jesus. Oh, double crotch.
Yeah. I
can't imagine how difficult it is to balance on those.
Oh, yeah.
While soaking wet, too.
Yeah. No, that could go bad in a lot of different ways.
What?
Oh, crooked referee.
Yeah.
Oh. So what do we have now? Are both referees crooked, or is it just the one?
Yeah, he draped Santo over him.
Mm-hmm.
Do both refs have to count three?
I don't know. The one referee's just stopped going down for counts.
Yeah, he's like, heck with this. Ah, this guy.
Yeah, the referee selling exhaustion. One thing about watching these international matches is not speaking the native language for the commentary, so we're missing out on a lot of plot points.
Yeah, good ref got knocked down. This could be it.
Been kicked to the balls by Del Santa.
Whoa!
No. Okay, now we've got the referees fighting each other.
What just happens?
I believe we have a...
what the hell?
Oh, that was something.
That was a bad ending. So the ref got knocked down, the good guy ref.
Yeah.
Parca went off the rope. Santo caught him with a shot to the groin. Evil ref went to count three. Good ref would have let him. Good ref threw evil ref off. Good ref counted three anyways, but then gave the match to Parca.
Yeah.
Well, we know where Russo was in 2001 in between WCW and TNA.
Oh, yeah. That's just where he went immediately afterwards. Yeah, that one needs a bit of explanation. Not sure what the logic was there. Now we just have a wild brawl.
Those are the guys that were with Santo.
Right.
Santo's leaving into the shadows.
Yeah, I'm confused. I mean, I don't know who is supposed to be the face or the heel.
Yeah, why would he be... why would the ref count to three if he was going to disqualify the guy?
Yeah. Unusual booking choices here. Otherwise, I mean, that was a really good match.
Oh, yeah. Great match with a terrible finish.
Yeah. Yeah, that's too bad. I guess that answers the question why this one isn't talked up more as an all-time classic. Because you can't really call it that with a finish of that was that shitty. Oh, well. It's a roll of the dice.
I mean, we're approaching a five-star. You know, we're approaching five stars with that.
Yeah, it started off really awesome. And yeah, for the most part, it was wrestled at a really great pace. Still, with the finish, it's easy. I'd say 4 stars.
Yep.
But I don't know if I'd go much higher. Also, not knowing the context.
Yeah, with a good finish, sure.
Yeah, with a good finish, it'd be
four and a quarter.
Yeah, getting up there. Yeah, and we're just getting a promo by This Is Ultimo Guerrero.
I believe so.
Yeah, again, like I was saying, not knowing the language, you're missing a lot of the important parts of the story.
Ultimo Guerrero is still wrestling as well.
Yeah, oh, a lot of those.
He's shown up to Ring of Honor a few times in the last couple of years.
Yeah, those Lucha guys, they go well into their 50s and into their 60s. Still wrestling like main events, too.
Yeah.
So we're getting whoever uploaded this video his watermarks or whatever. Yeah, that was fun, but yeah, that finish stunk. I'm not sure what exactly was what we were supposed to get from that, but oh well. Otherwise, good stuff.
Yeah, as we're talking, I'm trying to see if we can figure out what was the next card.
Yeah, I think they ran almost every week, it looked like, in the same building. And I know for sure La Parca wrestled the very next week in the same building, but I don't remember who he was matched up against or what kind of match it was. But yeah, again, hopefully, like, if Al Barik was out there for any knowledge on the Puerto Rican match we watched, that somebody out there maybe on PWO would know a bit about the story of that match, the Del Santo La Parca match, and can explain the context and the finish. And why it was maybe
hit us up, yeah.
why whoever booked it thought that was a good idea. Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was it was just too convoluted. It seemed like obviously they wanted to keep going with the program, with the feud, So you didn't want to have a decisive finish, but sometimes you can be a little too cute and come up with a finish that doesn't really make you want to see another match between them.
Okay, so yeah, the next card, Antifaz del Norte, that was the guy in the purple.
Oh, okay.
Who was helping La Park, and they were against Dr. Wagner Jr. and Ultimo Guerrero. So those would have been the two guys attacking after the bell.
Mm. And it shows you how much I know. So you're pronouncing it La Park. That's how you're supposed to. I've always pronounced it L.A.
Park. La Parca, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, his new name is La Park.
Maybe that's just the English way.
Yeah, I just, because it's the way they have the letters, I've always thought it was, you're meant to pronounce the letters individually. But that makes a lot more sense. It's La Park. Yeah. Cool. Well, this was fun, as always. Something different every week. And I think next week we may dip into my home country for some matches. There's one from the 80s Montreal, mid-80s Montreal, that I haven't seen before, remarkably. And it's pretty legendary in some parts, that's for sure. And I was thinking maybe to make it a Canadian theme, have the other match also be from Canada in the 80s. I have a few ideas. And yeah, for those who are just catching this show for the first time, the only rule on International House of Combat is basically no American matches or matches from America. So Canada counts, even though I am Canadian. But yeah, that's my one cheat to explore some matches, some extra matches. And Steve,
our rules.
Yeah, exactly. Steve, you suggested matches from Australia, maybe something to look into. Yeah, because we don't want to be coming back to the same countries time and again, even though there's tons of matches that we can explore. But it'll be nice to hit any different countries. Yeah, we'll come back again. I mean, of course, there's more wrestling from France in the 50s and 60s I'd love to watch. More World of Sport, more Japanese, more Joshi, more Lucha Libre, more Puerto Rico. Yeah, we've got tons of options. It's almost limitless. It's cool. All right. So let's see. You can also catch me on WorldCast, of course. We're back in action, looking at World Class from 1983 almost to 1984 now. I've been doing The Greatness of Randy Savage just by myself every once in a while, looking at the Randy Savage Unreleased DVD, getting into now 1991. And as always, I have a few ideas for other things that may pop up just out of the blue. You never know, so just be on the lookout for that. Steve, how's things with the main event these days?
Well, the main event, we're going to have to be looking for stuff to cover when there's not that much current wrestling going on. Yeah. So we do that every other week. We will be – we just finished one of the worst episodes of TNA that we've ever seen. Wow. Russo is an on-screen character now. Two segments of women beating were just abhorrent.
Oh, only two.
And yeah, but real bad, really bad. And we are going to be doing some greatest WCW matches for our once a month as well, looking into hopefully some of the more rare stuff that might not be talked about. And then also doing TDT talks for the Kings of Sport, which is, as I explained last time, it's kind of half group therapy, half podcast all-stars. Myself, Nate Milton, on the Kings of Sport feed. And you can check the first episode of that out for free. And the second and further, you can do their, I think, $5 per month on their Patreon. It's well worth it. I get about 6 pods a week from them. And really, that show is more just like, hey, how are we getting through this time of being stuck at home, quarantine? It looks like it's going to go on longer than we think. And helping out each other and talking about the things that we're enjoying. So it's not all doom and gloom.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of podcasts. Not that there was before, but now it's really ramped up in the last few weeks. And yeah, There's going to be some more new shows, I know, and yeah, maybe we're going a bit too crazy, but we've got a lot of time to kill and a lot of hours to fill. So, all right. Well, yeah, next time it's going to be O Canada on International House of Combat. And yeah, we'll see everybody then.
Take care.